Welcome to the Global Research News Hour. I'm Steve Lenman. The topic today will cover several things, but my guest is Marjorie Cohn. The topic will be human rights in the new Obama administration. And Marjorie is a distinguished law professor at Thomas Jefferson School of Law in San Diego. She's currently president of the National Lawyers Guild. She's been a criminal defense attorney at the trial and appellate levels. She's an author. She writes numerous articles for professional journals, for noted websites. She has a record of achievements and distinctions and awards that we could spend the entire program talking about for all the things that she does, teaching, writing, legal work, her activism for social economic justice. And she has a new book out as well. It's called Rules of Disengagement, The Politics and Honor of Military Dissent. And you can learn more about Marjorie by going to her website. It's Marjorie Cohn, C-O-H-N, .com. You can learn all about her, her work, her articles. And Marjorie, are we connected? Have they located you? Oh, we're still trying to find Marjorie. We just exchanged emails, so I know she's there. Well, let me just continue. She can only stay on for about 30 minutes. And my plan for the second half of the program is to talk about what's going on in Gaza. I put out a major article on it yesterday. Let me just alert my producer, Carrie, when you locate Marjorie, please cut right in and tell me. I wrote a major article yesterday that I titled Israel's Wanton Aggression on Gaza. And it was a very, very detailed account of what's going on the ground. It began Saturday. It hits you as a surprise when something like this happens. And yet it's really not a surprise because Israel has done this many times over the past six decades. It's a country that was born in war and carnage and the mass slaughter and dispossession of about 800,000 Palestinians, people who lived very peacefully on their own land for many generations, had a small number of Jews as neighbors. They got along just fine together. Once the Jewish population grew and the idea really germinated that Israel wanted a homeland, but the only way it could do it in Palestine, the original idea was to have one anywhere. Really didn't matter. And I don't know what was in the minds of the original planners, but I suspect since most of them were Eastern Europeans, they would have preferred one there. They're going to a very strange part of the world that's a desert and very, very different from Eastern Europe. But Palestine it became. The Balfour Declaration, 1917, established the right of Israel to have a homeland in Palestine. There was a UN declaration. I'm drawing on my memory for this. There was a UN declaration, I believe, in 1947, that amazingly, when the Palestinian population was about 70% and the Jewish population 30%, it gave Israel a majority of Palestine, something like 58-42. That was roughly the percentage. An astonishing division of the land. Then came the 1948 war and the terrible carnage. I've written about it. Welcome back to the News Hour. I'm Steve Lenman, and I think I am connected with Marjorie Cohn now. Marjorie, are we together?
We are indeed, Steve.
Oh, I think we had our phone numbers crossed, I think.
Oh, boy.
Welcome to the program. I introduced you. I explained who you were. I carried on valiantly until we got connected. And let's carry on, and we'll go as long as you can stay on. I know you have to leave, so I won't keep you any longer than you were able to stay. But let me mention one thing. There's so much to talk about, but the original reason I contacted you was that you wrote an article back in November. You called it Obama Spells New Hope for Human Rights, and you hold out hope that we will see some constructive change when the new administration comes in. If you've spotted some of my articles, I may cast a few more doubts than you do, but please explain a little bit about the hopes that you see may happen with the new Obama administration.
Well, you know, It's very early to tell, and Obama has been circumspect about issues that have come up since his election. He maintains that there's one president at a time. But I did a series. Actually, I've started a series, a five-part series on why Obama should ratify the leading human rights treaties that the United States hasn't ratified. And I've so far talked about two of those treaties. In the one piece you mentioned, Obama spells New Hope for Human Rights, I talk about why the government should ratify the International Covenant on Economic, Social, and Cultural Rights, which we have refused to ratify thus far, because although the United States touts civil and political rights as human rights, it refuses to commit itself to the protection of economic, social, and cultural rights. The U.S. inhumane policy toward Cuba exemplifies this dichotomy, where the U.S. criticizes civil and political rights in Cuba while totally ignoring Cuba's superior access to universal housing, health care, education, public accommodations, and guaranteed paid maternity leave. Now, Obama has, certainly the economy is going to be number one on his agenda, and it's in crisis, and it's not clear that even with the best of intentions, he will be a magician and pull us out of this. The hope is that that things will improve. But he's promised to create jobs, ensure that all Americans are covered by health insurance, and when he said he would cut taxes for 95% of the people but end tax cuts for the rich, the criticism was that he was socialist, that he wanted to spread the wealth. But that's actually his plan is fully consistent with our progressive income tax system. And in fact, after the election, 15,000 physicians called for a single-payer health care plan, which I believe that at one point Obama did support single-payer, but we'll see whether he agrees to send that treaty to the Senate for advice and consent to ratification. The second one I've discussed, called Obama Ratify the Women's Convention, is the most significant treaty that guarantees gender equality. The United States is the only democracy that refuses to ratify it. And U.S. opposition to ratification has been informed by the considerable clout of the religious right and the corporate establishment. And the full Senate has never voted on this convention on the elimination of discrimination against women. this particular treaty requires that parties to it take affirmative action to ensure equality for women in the areas of employment, education, health care, family planning, etc. Now, Obama has said that he supports ratification of the Convention against Discrimination Against Women, as well as the Equal Rights Amendment, and he is going to have to be reminded of that pledge. I just want to make one thing clear, and that is when the United States ratifies a treaty, it becomes part of U.S. law under the Supremacy Clause of the Constitution that says treaties shall be the supreme law of the land. And the other treaties that we haven't ratified are the Convention on the Rights of the Child, the Convention on the Rights of the Disabled, and then the International Criminal Court Treaty, which is not really a human rights treaty. It's more a criminal statute, a statute that would make us a party to the International Criminal Court. So those are that's my series, and you can find it on MarjorieCohn.com. Now, in addition to that, he has said he wants to close Guantanamo, and the hope is that Obama will make good on that promise and immediately close Guantanamo and release all the prisoners for whom there is no probable cause that they've committed a crime, and that means release them or repatriate them or send them to countries that will not torture them. Those for whom there is probable cause of criminal activity should be brought to the United States and tried in U.S. civilian or military courts, and Obama has advocated this in the past, but more recently, some of his staff have been talking about setting up special national security courts to protect classified information for these trials. But that is not necessary in the more than 100 terrorism prosecutions in the United States since 9/11. There hasn't been any problem with protecting classified information because we have a statute called the Classified Information Protection Act. So he needs to be urged not to set up these another level of courts with reduced due process, which would raise a lot of the same objections that the military commissions have.
Well, it's a big agenda, Marjorie, and I'll let you add to it if you have some more things. You and I both know so well that the only way really to get some of these things done is for grassroots efforts to hold our leaders' feet to the fire. If they feel the heat from below, it'll urge them to do some things that maybe they wouldn't have done without that heat. So I would say that's pretty crucial to do.
Oh, I couldn't agree with you more, Steve. on the issue of torture, which Obama has said he's absolutely opposed to, he should immediately issue an executive order saying that no U.S. agency will be allowed to torture or engage in cruel, inhuman, or degrading treatment, which also violates our law. On Iraq, he's pledged to get our combat troops out in 16 months. Bush has just signed an agreement with the Iraqi government that commits us to taking out all combat troops by the end of June of 2009. My understanding is now that the Bush administration is redefining people who are actually combat troops as other things. And so that's something that we're going to have to push Obama on. And this same agreement with the Iraqi government says that all U.S. troops, and that includes all the bases, everything, has to be out of Iraq in 3 years. Now, that's a long time, but Obama has indicated that he wants to leave some residual troops in for training, et cetera, and security, and he's going to have to be urged to abide by, at the very least, that agreement with the Iraqi government.
By the way, I could make so many comments about so many of these topics. We could talk all day about them. I know one very strong feeling I have about Guantanamo, Marjorie, is that Guantanamo, again, as you know so well, is only one of many other bases just like it, most of it with names none of us know about. We certainly, well, some of us know about the Bagram base in Afghanistan, but there are these prisons that I call torture prisons all around the world, some in other countries where we rendition people too. So closing Guantanamo would be a step forward, but my comment would be, what about all the others? Well, that's one comment. It's on Iraq, I'm very dubious about Iraq. I tell people, wondering whether we will get out of Iraq to any reasonable degree. I know we want to pull forces out because we want the Iraqis to do the policing for us. That's the way we like to do it around the world. But I look at Iraq and I say, look at Korea, South Korea, and that really is the future for Iraq. As long as there's enough oil in the region, not just in Iraq, but in the region, I just can't imagine the U.S. will pull out of Iraq.
Well, on the first issue on Guantanamo, your point is well taken, and that's why I said that Obama has to sign an executive order saying that we will not torture or engage in cruel treatment anywhere in the world, any U.S. agency, and also he should immediately close the secret CIA black sites, the ones you call torture prisons. In terms of Iraq, it's very clear, and I think it's been clear to many of us for many, many years, that the reason that Bush and Cheney went into Iraq was to set up these permanent U.S. military bases to control the region and control the oil. And you're right, the corporate interests are going to be very, very hard for Obama to buck. And for him to actually totally pull all U.S. troops out of Iraq is going to be a tall order. But once again, it's going to take tremendous pressure from the masses, from the ground up. And that means calling in to radio shows. That means writing letters to the editor. That means writing Congress, writing the State Department, and making people's voices known.
Also, and Chalmers Johnson has written a great deal about this, and we talked about it briefly on a program some months back, that before the economic crisis broke, Marjorie, that the country is literally bankrupting itself. If you throw in all of the categories related to defense, including Homeland and CIA and everything else, we're spending well in excess of $1 trillion a year on all of these kinds of activities. Now throw in all of the money, the trillions, and the latest number I've seen is $8.5 trillion, we're throwing at the economic crisis. My God, I read an article by a Malaysian writer who refers to the U.S. dollar as toilet paper. I mean, we're printing it like confetti. It may end up having no value. I'm not smart enough to know whether it will or not. But we have all of these things going on, including national insolvency or bankruptcy, plus all the human rights agenda, plus everything else. And the one thing we absolutely can agree on, Marjorie, is that hopefully there'll be no coup d'etat between now and January 20, and Obama at least will not be George Bush.
That's true. And, you know, I've been writing for many years, and I think you have as well, about Bush rattling his sabers against Iran. And I now think that given the economy and given this big tent that Obama is creating,
we have a commercial coming up.
That I don't think Bush and Cheney will invade Iran. Now, of course, we are going to be talking about Gaza, and that's another issue. But before we move on there, I would like to say another thing.
They're going to cut in.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Cone. They cut right in on us, Marjorie, for those commercials, but we have a few minutes before the bottom of the half hour. Is that when you need to leave?
Yes, I do.
Oh, okay. Well, let me let you finish up your thoughts between now and then.
Yes. Well, I know that we want to talk about Gaza a bit, but I just want to refer people to my article called Cheney Throws Down Gauntlet, Defies Prosecution for War Crimes, and it's on several of the websites, including globalresearch.ca and my own website, marjoriecohn.com, and it talks about why Obama should ask his new attorney general to appoint a special independent prosecutor to investigate and prosecute Bush, Cheney, Rumsfeld, Rice, John Yoo, Jay Bybee, etc., for war crimes, for torture, which Cheney actually publicly admitted to recently on ABC News, admitted that he had authorized waterboarding. Waterboarding has long been considered torture by U.S. courts. Torture is a war crime under our Federal War Crimes Act, and people who order torture can be found guilty under the U.S. War Crimes Act. So I would refer people to that article so that we can move on and talk a little bit about Gaza.
Oh, indeed. And at the bottom of the hour, we'll get cut off, and you'll run off. But can we say at the bottom that a to be continued, Marjorie, to give the Obama folks a chance to check out Capitol Hill, the White House, whatever, wherever they work from, and then have you come back on to give a little assessment of how things are going? It may take some weeks for them to be in, but I think we'll need to come back and talk about just what's going on, what are the prospects. I don't think there'll be immense accomplishments, but are things stirring that may signal they may go in the right direction on some things?
Yes, I agree, and I think that most immediately it's going to be very difficult for Obama to really, I think, clean up or try to help achieve peace in Israel and Palestine, given what Israel is doing right now and the timing. It really has very little to do with self-defense for Israel, because for over a year there has been no Israelis killed or wounded by these rockets that have been fired into Israel until Israel attacked Gaza, started bombing Gaza on Saturday, and then there was an Israeli death. It has more to do with the timing, with the elections in Israel in February, where the candidates want to appear tough on the Palestinians, and Israel wants to inflict as much damage as it can on Gaza while Bush is still in power, because Obama is an unknown quantity, and it will make it certainly much more difficult for Obama to participate in any peace process.
And also, Marjorie, since Hamas was democratically elected, I emphasize that, democratically elected in January 2006, Israel absolutely threw the book at them, have basically been at war with Hamas. I mean, it really is outrageous. It was an election that Israel tried to steer the other way. The Palestinians were so fed up, they voted Fatah out, they voted Hamas in, and Hamas is a completely different group than the way they characterize. They are not a terrorist organization. They do wonderful things for the Palestinian people as they're able. They have a militant group, and they use it not to go on the offense, but for self-defense. And they don't have F-16s. They don't have high-tech tanks. They don't have Apache helicopter gunships. They have hand weapons, and they have homemade rockets.
Well, keep in mind also, Steve, that during most of the year, most of the rocket attacks from Gaza into Israel were done not by Hamas, but by Islamic Jihad and some by the Fatah-based Al-Aqsa Martyrs Brigade.
Absolutely.
And
absolutely.
There is, listen, it is true that a people who are under brutal occupation have a right to defend themselves even with military force, but they should not target civilians, and these
Indeed.
Rockets cannot distinguish. However, the Israeli response, quote-unquote, has been vastly disproportionate, and under the Geneva Convention, the Fourth Geneva Convention has collectively punished the people of Gaza for the actions of a few militants, and that violates both U.S. and international law. And I would refer people to the National Lawyers Guild press release on NLG.org, which condemns the illegal Israeli massacre, calls for a ceasefire, and urges participation in demonstrations and protests. And then we have a list of dozens of protests that are going on as we speak this week all over the country. NLG.org for a list of the protests.
I'm going to do more articles on this crisis. And I began working on one yesterday, also this morning, when I got your press release. I'm going to quote that press release in my article. I really wanted to do a critique of the media, how one-sided it is for Israel, but I have a way of throwing all kinds of other things in my articles, and the press release was wonderful. It has good information in it, and I want to quote it, and I want to quote you in it, and I will.
Thank you, and your article was great, Stephen, that I read. Also, I would refer people to an article by Phyllis Bennis from the Institute for Policy Studies. It's called The Gaza Crisis, December 2008, and it really gives a very different view of what's happening there than we get from the corporate media. And it has some very good information. I also want to say that the Israel's invasion of Gaza or attack on Gaza and possible impending invasion violates two U.S. statutes as well, the Arms Export Control Act and the Human Rights and Security Assistance Act. And it's important to keep in mind that the United States gives tremendous amounts of money to Israel and for military, about $3 billion every year to Israel, which goes to buy F-16 bombers and Apache attack helicopters. Without U.S. aid, Israel would not be able to do what it's doing in Gaza.
Absolutely, and I guess you have to go.
I do indeed, and thank you so much for your important work, Steve, and
for
having me on.
Oh, Marjorie, thank you so much for coming on. It's always a great...
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
Welcome back to the News Hour. I'm Steve Lenman. We had Marjorie Cohn on in the first half of the program, and she was very kind to come on. She had another commitment and she had to leave. I plan to continue on solo. If anyone wants to call in, I'd be delighted to take the call. The topic absolutely is the crisis in Gaza. And if I'm able, I am trying to arrange another special program. I should say a special program. We'll have a special one tomorrow on a political prisoner by the name of Afia Siddiqui. I wrote a very extended article about her. An absolutely horrific case. I hope listeners will tune in to hear the way we treat innocent people. I'm talking about imprisonment, torture, rape in the case of Afia. It really is an absolute, it's a very painful story to listen to and to follow. The Gaza situation is very painful as well. It's very disturbing to me. It's a core topic for me to write about occupied Palestine. I've written in the last 3.5 years, in excess of 30, maybe 40 articles on occupied Palestine, on things going on. Absolutely outrageous material you'll never read in the dominant media anywhere in the world, especially in this country, that absolutely will not tell you what's going on. and the reports about what's happening now are grossly distorted. They can't help but get some important information in because the story is too horrific. But they never explain the context. They never give you the whys. Why on earth is Israel doing this? I mentioned in the first half hour that in January 2006, there was a democratic election in occupied Palestine. Israel totally controlled the process. They run everything in the territories. They occupy them, so they have total control. It's a military occupation. And in spite of it, the Palestinians were so fed up with the corrupted Fatah government that the so-called president, Mahmoud Abbas, now runs by coup d'etat with the help of Washington and Israel and the separation of Gaza from the West Bank, Abbas in the West Bank, Hamas in Gaza. So Gaza is enemy territory. It doesn't mean that things are glorious in the West Bank, because they absolutely are not. And why the people put up with it and the leadership of Abbas, I don't know. I suspect that'll only go on so long. I'm certain that a great many of them are very concerned and upset. But Hamas has been targeted since January 2006, and I've written plenty about it. They've been totally isolated. An economic and political embargo has been imposed. The territory since, around September last year, we're almost at the end of this year, around September 2007, the territory was a tightened embargo was placed on the territory, Gaza, and it's been under siege, and most essentials have not been allowed in. I've written several times about it. 95% of all business activity has been stopped dead in its tracks because supplies, parts, nothing can come in. Construction was ground to a halt because they can't get materials. Agriculture, half of agriculture has been wiped out. Let me just finish a thought and call or stay on, then please ask a question. Most essentials to life have been greatly curtailed, and in recent months, for the most part, not entirely, but for the most part, fuel and power have been cut off. Food has not gotten in. The UN and other relief agencies have run out of supplies. The people are slowly starving to death. Caller, please jump in and comment, question, whatever. Caller?
Oh, hi, Stephen. This is Randa.
Yes, Randa.
What I'm calling about, as you, I think you probably know, I'm an Arab. And I mean, this thing in Gaza is just so tormenting, but it's been going on for a few years. It's been going on for a long time.
It's been going on for six decades.
Yeah, it's just incredible. Now, this is the thing that I'm kind of wondering about, trying to get my head around. For one thing, it is very unusual. I mean, Israel, false flag after false flag after false flag. I mean, this is nothing new. They blow up buildings. They blow up countries. It's no problem for them. Why? I mean, they must be getting desperate, because now it is like out in the open for all the world to see.
I think
they're desperate to invade Iran.
Well, they absolutely want to attack Iran. They've wanted to since at least the late 1980s after the Iran-Iraq war, and so far the U.S. has not gone along. Israel absolutely will do nothing unless they get an okay from Washington. Why?
Really?
Because, as we mentioned briefly, we supply them with billions of dollars every year, the latest weapons and technology. If all of a sudden we cut that off, then Israel is dead in the water.
Mm.
I mean, it would be like cutting off their right arm. I mean, they're still a very, very potent country, a country with a population about the size of Greater Chicago, where I live, and it's incredibly the world's fourth most powerful military.
Right. Right.
Why? Because it has friends in high places, Rhonda. It really is a truly outrageous story. I've written how they absolutely trash international law. They trash their own law. They violate UN resolutions. They absolutely have no regard for the rule of law, for human rights, and they have one way of life in Israel for Jews, and they have another way of life for Arabs who are Israeli citizens. They simply have no rights whatsoever.
Right.
It's an outrageous situation, but they've waged war for ages. Israel needs conflict, Rhonda. Most people don't realize. Number one, the reason they're going after Hamas, it has nothing to do with their religious ideology, whether it's extreme, moderate, whatever. That's irrelevant. It's simply not an issue. Hamas is not a militant group. They have a militant wing for self-defense, but they don't attack anybody. They've never attacked anybody as far as I know, but they certainly will defend themselves vigorously, just like Hezbollah in Lebanon. And these organizations, Rhonda, are born out of previous conflicts. Hezbollah was born out of the Lebanon conflict back in the early 1980s. And Israel, that's when Israel invaded Lebanon, Rhonda, in 1981. They needed to find a reason to do it. There was no reason to do it. So they invented a reason.
Right.
And it was, are you still with me?
Yep. And they thrive on blood. I mean, this is somehow human blood is the thing that keeps them alive.
They need to do what we need to do here in this country. We need to stoke fear so that the public will go along with the most outrageous crimes. So in this country, we create the mythical bad guys in Iraq and Afghanistan. We blame the Taliban for 9/11. They had nothing to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
We say Saddam had all these weapons no one's ever found. And we're so convincing, we convince the public that we're in danger, so the government is doing things to protect the public. It's exactly the same thing in Israel.
Mm-hmm.
They need to scare the Israeli public to think they're bad guys. Hamas in Gaza,
right.
Hezbollah in Lebanon, Iran many, many miles away. Iran has never attacked anybody in its history as Iran.
7,000 years.
Well, I don't know what it did over 10,000 years, but since Persia became Iran in 1934-35, it never attacked anybody. It has no plans to attack Israel. Its leader, President Ahmadinejad, never said he wants to destroy Israel. What he did say was that Israel's policies are self-destructive. I'm using my language.
Mm-hmm.
And I've said the same thing, and others say the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Israel's policies are self-destructive, and in the end, if it doesn't change, it will destroy itself. And I absolutely believe that, and I'll say it openly to anybody. I think it's very truthful. I think America's policies are self-destructive.
Oh,
and if we don't change, we'll destroy ourselves.
And why? Why? With America being in the situation it is in right now, with so much financial devastation, you know, social unrest, really, people are really desperate in America right now. Why are we doing this, going and bullying people who are basically in a prison?
Oh, it defies logic. It, honest to goodness, defies logic. We're banking ourselves with our military, bankrupting ourselves with our military spending. We're throwing trillions of dollars at the economic crisis. We're printing dollars like confetti.
It's up to like $10 trillion in just the past 2 months. We've just thrown away to the
Wall Street. Oh, it is all thrown away. It literally is thrown away.
Yeah.
And the crux of the economic problem is a debt crisis, and we're attacking a debt crisis by creating a lot more debt. To me, that's insanity. It's like giving a drunk another drink. The drunk may feel better for a while, but the more the drunk drinks, the greater the hangover is going to be in the end. So we might buy ourselves some short-term relief, I don't know, months, a year, a couple of years. But we keep doing this, and we're heading for a dismal situation down the road. I also write about these topics. A key point on Hamas, Rhonda.
Mm-hmm.
The reason Hamas is targeted by Israel and by Washington is because, unlike Fatah is subservient
to
Israel's will,
exactly.
To Washington's will.
Mm-hmm.
Hamas is not. Hamas is independent. Hamas intends to serve the people it governs.
Ishmael, the head of Hamas?
Yes.
He lives in a refugee camp. He sits on the curb, in the streets, and talks to the people. He's a beautiful being. He's a beautiful being.
And the Fatah leaders like Abbas They live in luxury homes.
Exactly.
They have
getting
all
very
kind,
rich.
All kinds mm-hmm. of benefits. They
mm-hmm.
they live like royalty.
Right.
Well, Israel, that's fine with Israel.
Mm-hmm.
And Israel will even support them
mm-hmm.
as long as they surrender the rights of their own people to the rights of Israel and to Washington. And, of course, mm-hmm. the greatest tragedy of all is that world leaders, including Arab leaders, go along with this.
They're all Zionists. They've been bought and sold. Puppets.
Well, we either buy them or we scare them. We'll, in the case of Egypt, we give Egypt at least $1 billion a year.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, Mubarak is a dictator. He holds elections
mm-hmm.
that he wins with 98% of the vote.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of lame.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm sorry,
and then King Abdullah, what did he do? He gave 150,000, 130,000 or $300,000 worth of jewelry to what's her name? The one that looks like a lizard. Condoleezza
Rice.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
She looks like a lizard. Well, she acts like a lizard. A venomous lizard. Oh, it's incredible. There's so much. The so-called
mm.
peace process, Rhonda. Mm. I assure you that the mm. peace process is a total fake.
I know.
It always was a total fake.
I know.
It comes right out of George Orwell.
Mm.
Language that is exactly the opposite of what it means.
Mm.
There never was a peace process.
Mm-hmm.
There isn't one now. There never will be unless there's a total transformation of policy.
Mm.
I mean, it's going to take shaking the world to make these kinds of things happen.
And you know what? I actually keep thinking about the Russia-Iran-China alliance. They are very strong.
And at the same time,
they are very strong, aren't they? Do you think?
Oh, indeed they are, and other countries may join with them.
Do you think they will intervene on Gaza's behalf?
I think they'd be very leery about doing that. They certainly mm-hmm. don't support what's going on, but I think they're very leery, and the problem is the economic ties to the rest of the world. The U.S. is still the world's biggest market. We still have the world's most powerful military.
Mm-hmm.
Russia right now is going through its own economic crisis, and its ruble is going through an immense crisis. I have strong suspicions that has been engineered out of Washington.
Right, exactly.
As a way to show Russia,
mm-hmm.
here's a little taste of what we can do to you if you mm-hmm. decide that you really want to defy us
mm-hmm.
big time. We will debase your country. We will throw you partially into insolvency.
Mm-hmm.
We can do a lot to you without dropping bombs. And I think China feels the same way. So they're very concerned. And yet both countries are very powerful. They're both nuclear-armed countries. They can do a lot on their own if they decide they want to. We need to get a lot of countries allied with each other
mm-hmm.
who finally say they need to feel that U.S. policies are grievously harming them
mm-hmm.
so that they've reached a fork in the road.
Mm-hmm.
They need to keep going along with this stuff
mm-hmm.
and harm themselves terribly. Or they can decide that we're going to do something different
mm-hmm.
because we've got to stop the bloodletting on ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
That's
mm-hmm.
the way you get people to change what they do. So they haven't reached that point yet. Will they? I certainly hope so.
I think Russia's pretty close, though, because of what happened in August in South Ossetia.
Oh, I think Russia is very, very upset about that.
I think that was it for them. Because that was a U.S.-Israeli, that was a NATO operation.
Oh, absolutely, without question.
You know, that was just...
Oh, without question. Georgia. It would be like the city of Chicago attacking the U.S. Marines. I should say the Chicago Police Department attacking the U.S. Marines at their strongest point. Georgia
right?
to do this was absolute insanity.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a Washington operation. There were U.S. forces on the ground guiding them.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot to come out on that story.
Mm-hmm.
I wrote an article called, what was my exact title? Creating a New Cold War. That was roughly
yes.
the title.
I
do believe we're heading into a new Cold War
yep.
with Russia because
yep.
Russia is very independent, unlike in the 1990s under Boris Yeltsin. Boris Yeltsin was a Mahmoud Abbas. He surrendered to Washington.
Yep.
Putin and the new Russian president.
Medvedev.
They are a different breed.
Mm-hmm.
They believe that leaders should run their own country, not a government from another country. So they do it that way. But they want good relations with us. Unfortunately, the only way we want good relations is if they recognize us as boss. The rules of imperial management, which comes out of Noam Chomsky, the rules of imperial management, Rhonda, they're very simple. We're boss, and what we say goes.
Right, exactly, exactly. Oh, I'm losing my voice. Also, what was I going to say about what you just said?
You're a wonderful
Russia's
guest, by
really
the way.
Positioning itself around the world. They're building a lot of good relations.
I'm sorry, I missed that.
Oh, Russia is positioning itself around the world, really developing good relations with people, with countries.
Oh, and I think China, too.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think absolutely China, too. But, of course, they're doing it in their own self-interest.
Mm.
You want to stay on to the end of the program?
Sure.
That music means we have a commercial break.
Okay, take your time, Steve.
We'll take it, and when we come back, we'll finish up together.
All righty. There, now I can talk. Look at your face.
Welcome back to the News Hour. I'm Steve Lindman. Rhonda, are you still with me?
I am.
Oh, I will say, after that last commercial, I would say I had a knee surgery, but they didn't name it after me. But then I'm not I wasn't a famous baseball pitcher who I do remember. I don't follow much of it anymore, but I do remember the man who was mentioned. I might mention to you that I'm in contact with a guy, and to listeners, of course, I'm in contact with a Gaza professor on the ground, and he sends regular emails as he's able to. Power is extremely short in Gaza. He's operating a generator as he can to stay online and communicate with the world. But he sent, let me just see if I can find the email that he just sent. He sent an email just a short time ago talking about bombings just continuing.
Yeah.
Oh, I went off to take a look at something else. And see if I can find the darn thing. Oh, here it is. He talks about night bombing of Gaza, but he sent it, in the last 30 minutes. Let me read this to you. It says, just the opening line or so, it says, bombed by 20 missiles in 5 minutes. And this was 30 minutes ago. Bombed by 20 missiles in 5 minutes, in addition to another 20 targets hit. He talks about pictures. He talks about threatening phone calls, Israel making phone calls to Gazans, threatening them. And I mentioned this in a new article I'm working on, Israeli security calling up Gazans and telling them they must leave their homes because they're going to be bombed. Mm-hmm. I mean, these are civilians in their own homes. Their homes are going to be bombed, and they are. And he goes on, and I've read many of his emails. I quoted him extensively in the article I put out yesterday. One other thing, and then you chime in, Rhonda.
Okay.
He mentioned a terrible incident. He was very lucky. His daughter was waiting for a school bus.
Oh, thank God.
Young daughter. And a missile exploded 50 meters from where she was standing. Two young girls were killed, and his daughter just barely escaped. So it struck very close to home from him. The closest other than that is his windows were shattered by an explosion. But so far, he's been safe. But most of the deaths, the civilians, the U.S. media says they're mostly, quote-unquote, militants.
There's only been one military person who's been killed.
Well, I'm talking about Hamas now. They talk Israel is targeting militants, quote-unquote.
Right.
And most of the deaths are militants. Well, most of the deaths are civilian men, women, children, and infants.
Mostly children.
And those are the reports coming out of hospitals.
Right.
And the reports say people are arriving at the hospitals, quote, in pieces.
Yeah.
In pieces.
Yeah.
Outrageous stuff.
Entire families have been wiped out. Entire families.
Oh, absolutely.
And the bodies are just piling up at the morgue in the hospital. They don't even know what they can't cope.
Right.
I have two journalist friends in Gaza. I've told both of them, come. If you can get out of there, come with your family. Come stay with me in northern Florida because I have a farm down here.
And it's so tough because...
They can't. There's no way. I mean, I've tried getting money over to them over the past year, and you can't get money in, you can't get food in. The world needs to understand that these people, they can't eat.
Exactly.
There's no clean water.
You've got the blockade, the siege, and it's tighter than ever now.
Oh.
It truly is outrageous. Oh. Rhonda, where do you live in Florida?
Gainesville.
So you live a little bit up in the state.
Yeah, in the northern part.
That music means the program is coming to an end. Oh. Well, I'm delighted that you called. You were a very delightful guest.
Oh, you too, Stephen. God bless you. Thank you so much.
Thank
for
you
your
so
work.
Much. I'm trying to put together a special program for a week from tomorrow on Gaza, and I'm waiting to hear back from people I asked to come on.
Mm-hmm.
But I absolutely want to talk about this and highlight it.
Okay.
I will do my very best. Thank you so much.
All the best.
My heart is with you,
Stephen,
and all the people of occupied Palestine.
Love to you.
We'll be back tomorrow with a special program on political prisoners. Please tune in.